Welcome back to Writers on Writing on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. We're broadcasting live from the University of California campus in Irvine and streaming on the web at kuci.org. This show will join the other interviews up on the web and available to you via podcast. Feel free to visit iTunes. We're under Talk News on iTunes. You can always visit Barbara DeMarco Barrett's website, penonfire.com, for direct downloads, as well as information on past shows, upcoming shows, speaker series events, and lots of other stuff. I'm your host, Marie Stone, and I'm joined now by Ted Weinstein. Ted is an AAR member literary agent with broad experience on both the business and editorial sides of publishing. Before founding his agency nearly a decade ago, he held senior positions with several major publishing companies. Also a widely published author, Ted has been the music critic for NPR's All Things Considered and a commentator for many periodicals. It is my pleasure to welcome him this morning. Ted, hi.
No, thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Why don't we start by you talking about how you found your way into agenting, because I know you took sort of a circuitous route and had a... had a career before this. So talk a little bit about that, how you came to it.
Well, I always like to joke that I'm a recovering writer, and I've done a lot of writing in my past, and I must say that my grammar is quite functional, but beyond that, my writing is workmanlike at best, and so though I had a lot of fun with it and I learned a lot, it was pretty quickly evident that writing is not the way I should be making my living, and I shouldn't be subjecting strangers to my writing. But in the course of learning a lot, and in the course actually of querying some agents for a book I'd taken some time off to write, it was actually two other agents who sat me down under the guise of it being just a social lunch. And by the end of the lunch, they'd sort of looked at each other, winked, turned back to me and said, "We've decided you're going to be an agent." And because I'd done lots of different things in publishing in addition to the writing, I'd worked in a number of different publishing and communications roles. And the agents, this was, as you said in your introduction, almost a decade ago, said, "What do you think agents do all day? We do marketing, we do editing, we do business development, we do licensing, we do all of these different functions for authors, and you've done many of those things. The agencies are becoming even more vital to the industry, and we think you've got the basics, so get started." And at a certain point, when enough other people tell you to do something, it's foolhardy to argue. You just go off and do it.
I love it. I sit around waiting for signs like that in my own life, but so rarely do they come. That's a great story.
I think there are actually lessons for writers in that as well. And when I teach my book proposal boot camp, which is just a beginning to end, how do you do a book proposal? A big part of it is not about the proposal itself, but helping authors think through what's their motivation for what they're trying to do here. John actually said pretty much everything I have to say, so we might as well end the interview now. But he ended it on, as you pointed out, a somewhat of a downer note. And that's what I'll often try to do, is spend the first chunk of my time with a group of writers saying, "This is miserable, it's getting worse, you run away now." But then, once I've gotten everybody in the room to raise their hand and say, "Yep, we're really depressed and hopeless," then to say, "Okay, now let's look at the new future and that there really are opportunities here." And I think that for every writer, having a board of directors or a committee or whatever you want to call it, of folks that are great guides for them, great counselors and coaches for them, is essential. Mm-hmm. I don't want to sound too Northern California about it, and there's nothing New Age about this at all. I just think that in aggregate, the people around us who know us best know us better than we know ourselves. And those people can actually be professional contacts. Doesn't necessarily need to be just your parents, your kids, your family, your dog. It can also be folks you meet through the writing world. But whatever that group is, treat them seriously, ask them for advice, listen to what they have to say.
So tell me a little bit about the books you like to work on and what your agency represents.
I represent only nonfiction, in part because to me fiction is magical and I can't imagine how anybody would edit it. That to me is like editing a painting. And also so that I can have the pleasure of reading a novel without feeling like I have to make marginal notes all the time. So I focus only on nonfiction, but within that realm, a pretty broad range, roughly about a third serious narrative, history, biography, current affairs, popular popular science, that sort of storytelling. About a third, very practical books, news you can use, business, health, cooking, personal finance, a whole range of very practical information. And then a third that's harder to characterize because it's more sort of in the realm of pop culture, often web-based projects, just the sort of quirky project that nobody could predict in advance, but some uniquely creative individual popped up with a great idea and developed something that works very well in book form.
It strikes me that in the nonfiction realm, you have to be a little bit more conscious of the market than you do in, you know, I just love this book. And, you know, in the fiction world, you hear of agents say, I just love this book and I wanted to sell it. For you, it sounds more like what sells, what can I sell, as opposed to the more subjective what you love. Is that how you choose books, or...?
I think you're right in a general sense about slight difference between fiction and non, but in this day and age, as always, but especially now, publishing is a business, and I think there's only so much fiction anybody in the industry can work with if there isn't also some reasonable likelihood of commercial success. And in nonfiction, I've represented books that have sold for many, many hundreds of thousands of dollars and have been bestsellers around the world. I've also worked with clients on books that had a much smaller audience that have sold, excuse me, for more modest advances and in smaller numbers, but the author and I and the readers loved that project as well. So although often you'll get into a group of publishing folks and they'll say, oh, I do this for love. That's a lovely statement, but I also do this for money. This is how I make my living, which is true of most people in the industry. The days of sort of dilettantes with a trust fund have pretty much diminished. So I think we all want to love what we work on, but we are also very well aware, whether on the fiction or nonfiction side, that publishing is a business, and the success in numbers is a marker really at core for how many readers did the author reach. Mm-hmm. And I think that's every author's goal, is to reach the widest possible readership.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. My guest is Ted Weinstein, literary agent. So tell me about the emerging areas or trends in nonfiction over the course of the last 10 years that you've been doing this, how things are changing and where things are going.
I think everybody is watching the electronic world and wondering what effect it's going to have. I think there's a lot of preliminary guesses, but at the moment, the percentage of books that are being sold as e-books is still very small. We all see a wave coming, but I think at this point, everybody is just making their best guesses. The other part of electronic publishing, though, that I think is not being discussed enough is print-on-demand. And I think that some combination, both are based upon the notion of electronic distribution. And I think that is a fundamental change that is threatening the existing business models, especially for the publishers, but also for the agencies and for authors.
Yeah.
But I think it also then provides new opportunities. It was funny, I got my start in, quote, the content world 15 years ago when the Internet was first becoming a consumer medium. And everybody was buzzing about the word disintermediation, as if all of a sudden there'd be a direct line between two ends of the universe. The equivalent today would be saying that, great, every author is going to have a direct relationship with readers. That is theoretically true. For readers who are, your listeners rather, who have heard about this, Seth Godin made a big pronouncement, as he always does about anything he does, but he made a big pronouncement about he's no longer going to work with his major publisher and will just work directly with his readers and find ways to reach them. That is a lovely goal. He can probably execute that, but that's after decades of working through traditional channels. Mm-hmm. And so I think the notion of disintermediation is a lovely phrase which means nothing. The real issue is, what's the re-intermediation? And I think between a first-time author and their first-time reader of that author, there will be new intermediaries springing up that are providing value both to the author and to the reader. To the author, it's folks that can help them be better writers, package their material better, get the word out better about what they're up to. And for readers, it's going to be some existing and or new intermediaries that help them find the writers they're going to be most interested in that they wouldn't have heard about otherwise. So the roles will continue. Electronic distribution means, I believe, there are going to be whole new people stepping into both of those roles. And still, at the end of the day, it's going to be a great writer sitting down and writing something that eventually touches a reader very deeply.
Yeah. It's interesting, this new arm of Amazon where, you know, you can self-publish, and if you're selling well enough, Amazon will find you and publish you that way. You know, I follow a lot of, you know, random blogs and word of mouth on the internet. So it does seem like there are new and different ways that books are getting out there. But I think you're right. That's really an uphill battle for new writers to try and do it that way.
But that also is not new. I've had several clients who self-published their book initially and had the kind of success that was indicative of even larger opportunity with a major publisher. So I have a client by the name of Peter Montoya who wrote a book called The Brand Called You, which actually isn't focused on writers, though the core premise is, of course, important to writers and everybody else who's working on their own. He self-published the book, sold 65,000 copies around the world. And then, at that point, knew that to get it to the next level of distribution and marketing opportunity, he made the choice to take, obviously, a lower royalty per unit, but to work with a major publisher. So I sold the book for him at that point to McGraw-Hill, and the book has gone on to even greater success.
Amazing. Amazing.
So now that is in the pre-electronic world. If you do well by yourself and there's an opportunity for a major publisher to take you even bigger, those opportunities are always going to be there.
Yeah, yeah. My guest is Ted Weinstein. He is the literary agent. And tell me about, on the content side, emerging trends in nonfiction content-wise, what the new trends are, where the new areas of kind of hot topics are.
I'd be happy to talk about that, but first I want to give a caveat that for most, almost every author, trying to write to the trends is a foolish errand.
Mm-hmm.
One, because for almost every writer, writing what you know or love or have some experience with means you're just going to do a better job.
Mm-hmm.
And the second is, even with new electronic tools, book publishing is rightly a slow process. And so to be trying to jump on the latest celebrity incident to write a book, there are always going to be a couple of those books that are crashed to market. But for, I would assume, almost everybody listening today and almost every serious author out there, it makes more sense to get really good at your topic, your craft, build your own presence in the world, and the world will beat a path to your door, or at least when you go out there into the world, there's going to be some receptiveness. That said, though, I think the one category that's changed that's new in the past 10 or 15 years is the notion of micro-histories or concept histories or books about nouns. You can call them whatever you will. There have always been wonderful celebrity bios. There have always been thrillers. You can go through every category of writing that you see on the bestseller list. Those have existed for all time. More recently, though, started a while back with the book Longitude by David Sobel, there's now those really intimate books that tell the story of an object. And through that, it's a lens to something larger. That's a little bit new, although we're starting to run out of nouns. So I hope if anybody's listening today who can think of a noun about which a book hasn't yet been written, please contact me. There might be a market opportunity there for us. But within that, I think the core lesson is humans haven't changed in a very long time. We may dress differently, our sense of aesthetics may change, but a wonderful book I highly recommend is by Michael Korda, the grand editor from formerly of Simon & Schuster, who wrote a book called Making the List. And what he did was he went through, I believe it was Publishers Weekly's bestseller lists for the entire 20th century, basically. And he showed that in every decade, the bestseller lists have the same kind of books. It's all the same human interests that are reflected in the books that are most popular. Same as with movies or music or anything else.
I love that. I love that. Great advice. I love the advice on, you know, just following what you're interested in and digging into a subject matter and not trying to follow trends, because I hear this over and over again of people trying to predict the market, and it's such a losing, I think it's such a losing battle, but
yeah,
that's great. I also want to mention your website is fabulous, twliterary.com. In particular, there are two talks you give that you've alluded to before, this boot camp on book proposals, and there's one on there on fiction. Both of those talks, I think, are really invaluable for people. Any writer, really. I mean, there's just endless advice on there that I thought was really fabulous.
And if anyone's having trouble sleeping, they're wonderful soporifics.
No, they're really wonderful. And in one of those talks, you had mentioned academic presses wanting to do more publishing, and I think that's a market that people don't necessarily think about. That you know, beyond Simon & Schuster, there are a lot of other presses that are out there that people should be tapped into. Tell me also about a little more about self-publishing and your thoughts on that going into the future.
I think the opportunities for authors are wider and wider. But again, the first question for an author should be, what is it you're trying to accomplish? The venues for anybody to basically share the contents of their head are now literally infinite. As you were discussing earlier with your previous guest, John, whether it's a blog, whether it's Twitter, whether it's Tumblr, whether it's print on demand, whether it's Scribd, there are more ways than anybody could count just to share your thoughts and to share your words. And in fact, let me recommend a different boot camp. I guess that's the phrase du jour or du year, but the self-publishing boot camp, which is taught by two real self-publishing experts here in the Bay Area, and I believe they're going to start taking it nationally. And that's just selfpubbootcamp.com, all one word. And they go in-depth into every aspect of what self-publishing is all about, which is not just the writing, it's not just the formatting for a screen, but all the other elements that go into being literally a self-publisher. And that means taking on lots of roles that are currently fulfilled by agents and or publishers themselves. So the opportunities are enormous, and I think what's important is that anybody think through very carefully. If they're looking for the validation of a major publisher, that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to sell more copies or make more money. But if that's what you want, that's fine. Then you need to go through the right channels to try to pursue that opportunity. If instead you want to just try to build your own audience and maximize your own revenue from that directly, self-publishing may be the opportunity. If you're looking for the right editorial relationship, as you mentioned a few moments ago, sometimes an academic press is the right place to go. Many of them, although obviously troubled by the decline in public financing these days in every realm, some of them are continuing to do remarkably good work in areas that we would consider trade publishing, aiming at a general audience, not aiming at an academic audience. So ever more research is necessary for an author, but ever more opportunities are out there.
Mm-hmm. My guest is Ted Weinstein, the head of the Ted Weinstein Literary Agency. As the publishing world is evolving and changing and, you know, perhaps shrinking, tell me about the evolving role of the agent and how your job has changed in response to what's been happening in the industry, how your relationships with your clients have changed, and, you know, if your role is a new one or if it's sort of being held constant despite the changes around you.
Well, everything I now am about to say, of course, will sound self-serving, but you've asked me to speak what I believe, so I'm not going to be shy about that. I think that increasingly the agencies are going to take on a larger and larger role in the industry. What those roles are going to become exactly is still up for grabs. But I'll share with you a quote from many, many years ago by Salman Rushdie, who at the time had been writing and publishing for maybe 20, 25 years, and he said he had had more editors than he could even remember, but he'd only had one agent that entire time. So the notion of the agent-author relationship being the primary relationship for most authors, that's actually not new. But the roles that we're taking on for authors have been increasing, particularly as especially the major publishers have been functionally outsourcing more and more of what they used to do. That in some ways, agenting, which is a relatively new innovation, is in part outsourcing the scouting to somebody else. But publishers over time have been obviously outsourcing the literal printing. Many of them outsource their distribution to others. Often they're hiring freelance editors, freelance page designers, freelance cover designers. Big corporations, for their own appropriate benefit, do this very often in lots of realms. But what that's doing is, and no surprise to anybody listening, it's putting more and more of the burden on the author. And in turn, because authors' real expertise should be in the writing and the reporting of whatever they're working on, a lot more of those roles have been absorbed into agencies. So what I do as an individual, or what a few of the much larger agencies do with hiring additional staff, is editorial work, helping out on the publicity, brand building for the author over time, career counseling, many, many, many different functions. So in some ways, it's often helpful to think metaphorically. Look at another industry, like the movie industry. Over time now, when you look at the major studios, they are really not doing much other than financing and distributing a major film. The rest of the work is now done by the producers, who assemble the acting talent, the directing talent, the script, the craft people, and so on. They package something up, go to a studio, and get it financed. And that is not an identical overlap, but very close to what is becoming more and more common in book publishing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We hear a lot about the importance of platform in nonfiction writing. You talk about this in your boot camp speech as well. Tell me about the importance of platform, how to establish it, what you recommend authors do to build it, and just a little bit about that.
It's funny, authors often come to agents and say, great, you know, get me my first book deal and then I'll be famous. And our rejoinder is, no, first get famous and then I'll get you your book deal. And somewhere between those two mindsets is the reality for most authors who have real potential. There is no one bit of information or advice I can give. Every author's got different strengths, is working in a different realm. But the key is to think very dispassionately, very professionally about how many people know who I am, respect what I do. There's a wonderful concept that started to get publicized by Kevin Kelly about 10,000 true fans. And the notion is that if you want to live a creative life, that you can probably do that in many different realms of the arts if you can build an audience and cultivate that audience of 10,000 true fans who will follow anything you do in your creative life. And by follow, I mean they'll buy your album or your book or go watch your movie or whatever it is. That's the scale, that's a threshold. With the new electronic publishing tools, that may be even more easily sustainable because you can reach those people directly without too many intermediaries. Once you get with an even larger fan base than that, whether you're writing for a major periodical, getting your voice out on National Public Radio, whatever it is, then there's even bigger opportunities, often through the corporate channels that do exist today. But either way, the mindset should be, before you even think about what are the right ways to reach people, hey, who am I? What do I have to offer? Who are the right people that should know about me already? And then the book and the playing cards and the cocktail napkins and the calendars and however many other ways you find to exploit your wisdom, those will all come in due time.
I love it. Any last-minute words of advice that we haven't covered so far? Well, I'm sure there's lots of advice we haven't covered so far, but if you can distill it down to a minute or two.
A couple of things. One is, the most important is, just for authors who want to treat this like a real profession, act with a sense of professionalism. Agents are always astonished by the folks who approach us in the wrong way, don't do their homework, treat something as an off-the-cuff attempt at whatever, instead of saying, hey, this is something I want to do and get paid for. This is something I want to succeed at. Act like a professional, and the industry will treat you accordingly. The second is to just do lots of research. Every agency has a great website right now. We all have an enormous array of information we offer authors. We all tell you a lot about ourselves. Be self-possessed as an author. Look at all that's out there, and then make very informed decisions about which agents you'll want to query, so that you'll only be talking to folks you might actually want to work with when the opportunity arises.
That is great advice. I want to mention your website again is twliterary.com. Again, there's a lot of information on there, but those two talks I really do recommend. They really are fabulous in a lot of different ways. Ted, this was a huge pleasure. I really appreciate you taking the time this morning.
No, I'm delighted to do it. Thanks very much for having me.
Thanks again. That was Ted Weinstein. His website, again, twliterary.com. You can find more information about Ted, the types of work his agency represents there, as well as those two great talks. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'll be back with you next Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. So until next time, thanks so much for joining me. Have a great day.